From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Asthma, wildfire deaths, more insect-borne diseases, more allergies. Well, doctors in the New England Journal of Medicine are saying if you look carefully, you can already see the damaging health effects of climate change. They say physicians are morally bound to pick up the fight, advocating for their own industry to reduce its climate impact. Healthcare, by the way, which makes up 10% of all U.S. emissions. But there's also more. They're saying doctors should push everyone, their patients and policymakers, to get real about the global health emergency that climate change will bring. Well, this hour in Point, physicians speaking out on climate change. And you can join us. Have you felt the health impacts of increasingly severe natural disasters, of heat waves or illnesses that could be linked to climate change? Have you found yourself wearing a mask, for example, even hundreds of miles away from a wildfire? And what about all those waterborne worries after major hurricanes? And physicians, are you seeing the effects of climate change walking into your offices? How do you see your role in protecting patients against the future of climate change? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. And a little later this hour, we're going to be hearing from Dr. David Satcher. He's former U.S. Surgeon General, and he recently wrote about exactly this issue, about the global health effects of climate change. He'll be joining us a little bit later. But let's begin first with Dr. Regina LaRocque. She's a specialist in internal medicine and infectious diseases at Massachusetts General Hospital. She's also an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. And she co-authored the perspective titled Climate Change, a Health Emergency, with Dr. Karen Solomon. It appeared recently in the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, if you go to our website, onpointradio.org, you'll find a link to Dr. LaRocque's piece. And also, we've linked to a really fascinating interactive from the New England Journal of Medicine that shows climate-linked health concerns around the world. It's really, really instructive. So take a look at that at onpointradio.org. But first of all, let me welcome Dr. LaRocque. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Okay, so I first wanted to start out with some specific examples of how we may be seeing climate change linked to different health effects. And if you'd allow me, I'd like to actually play a little bit of tape here. This is after Hurricane Maria swept through Puerto Rico in the fall of 2017, because, of course, with climate change, we're seeing increasing severe weather events. And you're about to hear Dr. Cherie Umpieri. She's head of obstetrics and gynecology at Centro Medico Hospital. And after Hurricane Maria really, you know, wiped out Puerto Rico, she told CBS News she'd never seen, quote, anything this bad ever.
I can see the volume of people increasing every day, and people that are not from our clinics, people that are just saying, you know, I can't find my doctor. Will you take care of me?
So that's just one example of the immediate impact that I guess the destruction of the medical infrastructure can have.
Absolutely.
After a major weather event. But give us some more examples. How are we seeing health changed from increasing severe weather?
Sure. Well, I think that's an incredibly powerful piece that you just played. And it actually is underscored by some really important data from the School of Public Health here at Harvard that showed that, in fact, thousands of people died after the hurricane in Puerto Rico, not just the people who died during the actual event, but people who subsequently died because the infrastructure for the medical system was devastated. So that's a really important cause of immediate health effects for people in our country. There's a lot of other sections of our medical system that are affected by climate as well. I'm an infectious disease doctor, so we spend a lot of time thinking about the fact that insect-borne illnesses have spiked in our country over the last 10 to 15 years. We've seen a tripling of diseases related to mosquitoes and ticks. We've seen the emergence of new tick-borne illnesses that have never been seen before. Here in Massachusetts, we've seen cases of encephalitis from viruses that we've never encountered. Obviously, many things are at play in the emergence of these diseases, but climate is one important part.
Well, so I was going to ask you about that because, especially with infectious diseases, things move around a lot. But when you say climate is one important part, what's the research out there that tells us how much of a link there may be?
Sure. Well, I think as an infectious disease specialist, we're all aware that there are factors outside the human body that interact with our likelihood of getting disease. And specifically for insect-borne illnesses, lots of things that are directly related to climate, like humidity and temperature, affect the behavior of these insects and consequently the likelihood of humans getting diseases. So we've seen a spread in the geographic range of a number of the insects that transmit human illnesses. We've seen a prolongation of the season during which they're active. And then the human consequence of that is we now see more cases.
Wow. So infectious diseases, or insect-borne diseases, I should be more specific, one area of concern for you. Let's go back to the severe weather events, though, because, I mean, we focus on the devastation of the medical infrastructure after a hurricane, but aren't there also other health effects that come after, you know, a giant hurricane? I'm thinking, like, water quality is an issue, the effects of the homelessness that people suffer.
Yeah,
tell
for sure.
More.
Well, I think you really hit the nail on the head. So one important piece is the really strong mental health impacts of being displaced from your home and having the loss of your property. So there's clearly a spike in depression and PTSD and suicidality after these severe weather events that we're coming to appreciate. And these are long-term effects for the population. And the other area you were asking about
was water quality.
Example, yeah. For sure. So whenever there's flooding or disruption of the water system, there's the possibility of contamination, spread of food and waterborne illness through contaminated water. And that has certainly been a concern in places where severe weather events have taken place.
Okay. So lots of severe weather events, or a growing number of them, and the health effects there. We talked about infectious insect-borne diseases. I'm not going to confuse insect-borne diseases as well. And I want to talk about air, air quality here. Let me just play a little bit of tape. This is from the director of the Puget Sound Clear Air Agency. You're about to hear Craig Kenworthy speaking with CBS News reporter Carter Evans last August about wildfires that were basically burning, as we know, from California all the way to Canada, and how that affected the quality of the air in Seattle.
This is the worst air quality we've had across the region since 2000.
And right now, it's some of the worst air on Earth. So bad that just spending the day outside is equivalent to smoking nearly 8.5 cigarettes.
That was in Seattle.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not even right next to where the wildfires have been taking place. So the effects on air quality of the wildfires in California are profound. And we already know that particulate matter, which is what's released from burning soil and trees, is a really important cause of respiratory disease, cardiovascular disease, maybe even other things like effects on human development in young children. So these are potent toxins, essentially, that are in the air and have profound human health effects. I think in the coming years, we are going to see, as we study what's happened in California, what the health implications really have been and will continue to play out to be.
Okay, so those are health effects due to the particulate matter that comes from wildfires. Are there also other air-related health effects that we need to be concerned, say, about in urban environments where we might have summers that go longer and are hotter as well? Because if I remember correctly, there are links between, you know, ambient air temperature and the amount of nitrous oxides or the things that may trigger, like, asthma events in people.
Right. Well, you really hit on two issues. I mean, one is heat waves, and we definitely know that people, particularly people in urban heat islands or areas of cities that can get really hot, are prone to die during heat waves. We saw in Europe in 2003 that 35,000 people died during the heat wave, mostly elderly people. We've had the same issue in the U.S. during extreme heat events. So that's definitely a concern. Aside from that, climate change is effectively caused by burning fossil fuels, and burning fossil fuels releases lots of air pollutants like particulate matter, but also other air pollutants that cause ground-level ozone. These are the air pollutants that cause human disease. So frankly, by addressing climate change, we are simultaneously improving our air quality, and we stand to actually improve everybody's health by addressing these topics.
Okay, well, Dr. LaRocque, stand by here for just a second because I want to bring in another voice into this conversation. Joining us from Washington is Dr. Mona Sarfati. She is Executive Director of the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health at George Mason University's Center for Climate Change Communication. She was also formerly a family physician as well. Dr. Sarfati, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So you've been studying this for quite a while, and you heard Dr. LaRocque just take us through some of the ways that we may be seeing negative health effects from climate change. How strong, first of all, are the links?
The links are very strong. They're quite direct. We surveyed doctors around the country in several medical societies, and we found that more than half, 70%, are seeing patients in their own offices who they identify as being impacted by climate change. We asked them for examples of exactly how patients are being affected, and they gave us many, many stories of people whose allergy conditions were worsened and who were having symptoms for much more of the year and required more medicine. We got stories from physicians who were in areas that flooded because of torrential rains. This was true down in Louisiana in 2016 when there was a 1,000-year rain event. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was the third event in several years of much greater magnitude than normal. And the flooding meant that people had to be evacuated. They left their medicines at home. And then in the evacuation centers, they didn't have the medications they needed, so the doctors became involved in trying to get people their medicines. We've heard from a physician in North Carolina who was practicing there in an emergency room at the time of a fire that occurred during a particularly dry year, and saw many more patients in his emergency room who came in with asthma or chronic lung conditions or pneumonia, even bronchitis. And he saw more patients who came in with heart attacks and heart failure.
Wow.
So there are direct impacts all over the country. Everywhere in the country, people are being directly harmed because of climate change. Their health is being harmed. Some people are at greater risk.
Yeah.
So kids are at greater risk because they spend more time outside. People who work outside are at greater risk. If there's any kind of underlying chronic condition, lung condition, heart condition, they're at greater risk. The elderly at greater risk. It turns out pregnant women are also at greater risk.
Well, Dr. Sarfati, stand by here for just a second, and Dr. LaRocque as well. We are talking about the health effects of climate change and whether doctors should be more proactive in helping their patients and policymakers think about it. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about whether or not climate change ought to also be seen as a global health emergency. I'm joined today by Dr. Regina LaRocque. She's an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at Massachusetts General Hospital. She co-authored a perspective paper called Climate Change, a Health Emergency. It appears in the New England Journal of Medicine, just published last week. Dr. Mona Sarfati joins us as well. She's executive director of the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health at George Mason University's Center for Climate Change Communication. I just want to play another example here because there are so many. Before the break, Dr. LaRocque, we were talking about heat. Well, a meteorologist declared Japan's record heat wave in the summer of 2018 a natural disaster. 65 people died, at least 65, due to the heat. And here's a report from Al Jazeera in July.
Japan is fighting back against a heat wave that is striking many parts of the country. At least 22,000 people have been treated in hospital for heat stroke.
At least 22,000 people treated for heat stroke in Japan last summer. So just, again, one of many examples that we could pick from. But Dr. Sarfati, let me just start with you on a basic question here. We have had a multiplicity of reports from the United States federal government, from the International Panel on Climate Change, from the World Health Organization, about climate impacts. have the health effects of climate change been as central to these reports as you'd like to see?
We know that climate change is harming health of people all over the United States in addition to the world, and some people are at greater risk. I mentioned several of the types of folks who are at greater risk before: pregnant women, children, people who live in areas that are greatly affected, people of lower income who can't get out of harm's way when a storm threatens, and some communities that have already faced environmental injustice. And unless we act, these harms will get will increase. So we must move forward with solutions. And the Medical Society Consortium is informing the public and policymakers that these harms will worsen unless we act. But we know what we need to do, and that's the good news. We need to decrease use of fossil fuels, increase clean energy, and energy efficiency. And the sooner we do that, there will be health benefits that will be widespread, because reducing fossil fuel use will mean that we'll have cleaner air and cleaner water. And we know that that will improve health of people.
Dr. LaRocque, go ahead. Jump in here.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think this piece in the New England Journal is really a call to action for doctors, nurses, and other health professionals in this country to step up and take ownership of climate change as a fundamental health issue. You know, we are the most trusted sources of health information for people around the world and in this country. And I think it's our responsibility to be 100% clear that this is a real threat to the health of our communities and our patients. And we need to use our individual and collective voices to spread that message far and wide.
You call it a moral obligation.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, we're not just scientists, but we're also healers. We're people who have chosen to dedicate our lives to making people healthier and to reaching out a hand to somebody who's sick. And I think the data are clear that this is a crisis of public health, and people need to hear from us about this. Yeah. They don't want to just hear about this from intergovernmental panels on climate change. They want to hear about it from physicians and people they trust.
Well, so about this notion of doing no harm, right, as the fundamental drive for physicians as healers, what about change begins at home as well? Because I was really quite surprised to see that 10% of emissions, of climate emissions in the United States come from the healthcare sector.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are really surprising, and I think we all need to recognize this. If you took the U.S. healthcare sector as a country, it would be the seventh leading country in terms of its greenhouse gas emissions. So we really have a responsibility to also tend to our own garden. The good news is there are institutions around the country, including Partners Healthcare here in Boston, others here in Boston through the Green Ribbon Health Commission, but many other health institutions around the country that are taking this issue up and working to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. But frankly, healthcare uses a lot of resources. We require a lot of energy. We make a lot of waste. We feed a lot of people. And so there is a tremendous opportunity here for us to insist on a transformation of the healthcare sector also as part of this.
Dr. Sarfati, what do you think? I mean, that 10% number still sticks with me. It's quite large. There does seem to be an opportunity here for the healthcare sector to lead by example.
No question about it. And many hospitals and health systems are doing exactly that. There are at least two health systems in the Midwest and Wisconsin that have either achieved 100% use of clean renewable energy or have made that their goal. And in fact, there's hundreds of hospitals around the country that have pledged to reduce their output of greenhouse gases and to improve their energy efficiency, improve their food supplies so they are serving organic food, locally grown organic food that doesn't need to travel over such long distances. And organic farming actually takes some of the carbon out of the air and sequesters it back in the ground. So the food system is also a piece of the solution. And there is an organization of hospitals, Healthcare Without Harm, or Practice Green Health that is working with these health systems around the country to try to achieve goals and to get the other hospitals around the country to also set goals and move in that direction.
Well, let's take a quick call here. Let's go to Heidi, who's calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Heidi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, Heidi.
Hello. I was calling because I was diagnosed in March of 2018 with Lyme disease, and I've been treated here in Omaha and recovered nicely. But my problem is I had a really hard time getting a diagnosis because they don't think it's here in Nebraska.
Yeah. Well, Heidi, thank you so much for your call. Dr. LaRocque, let me just get a quick response from you there. Heidi brings up a potential impact here that I hadn't thought of, that regarding these insect-borne diseases as they spread to places where physicians may not be familiar with it, that they're playing catch-up and trying to figure out, you know, what they're seeing coming into their offices.
Sure. I mean, I think there's some complexity around the issue of Lyme disease diagnosis, which I'll put aside. But frankly, the issue she raises is true, which is we need to have a public health system that is prepared to recognize and respond to new things as they emerge. And that's part of adapting to what is coming our way, making sure that we're ready as a public health system to do the type of surveillance we need to do, to be prepared with emergency and disaster response plans. And a big piece of it is being there on the ground, recognizing things as they emerge. Yeah. So having a strong public health workforce is definitely part of being ready for climate change.
Okay, well, Dr. LaRocque and Dr. Sarfati, stand by here for just a second, because I want to spend a couple of minutes talking with someone who can definitely give us some expertise on viewing climate as a public health issue. Joining us now from Atlanta is Dr. David Satcher. He was the 16th Surgeon General of the United States. He served in that post from 1998 to 2002. And he recently co-wrote an opinion piece titled "Climate Change is Affecting Health Now. Our Leaders Must Take Action." It was published in the health news website Stat, and we have a link to it at onpointradio.org. Dr. Satcher, welcome to the program.
Hello.
It's a real pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Let me just first of all ask you, do you think United States policymakers view or are viewing climate change as a potential health emergency enough or even at all?
Certainly not enough. Without question, we need to respond to this emergency, and we're not. And it's global, of course. Before I became Surgeon General, I was director of the CDC, and I especially remember some of our experiences in the mid-90s, including the heat wave in Chicago and all the deaths that occurred. And they were primarily in older and poor people. Some of these older people didn't have air conditioning and, because of a lack of safety, could not even open their windows. And so we had to make some major adjustments to be ready for the next heat wave. But globally, you know, at one point, 3 million children were dying a year from diarrhea-related diseases. And so it is a global problem, without question. And I think physicians have a major responsibility, just like we have and had with tobacco. When Luther Terry released the Surgeon General's report on smoking and health in 1964, physicians were not active in the fight against tobacco. In fact, there were a higher percentage of physicians smoking than the rest of the population, like 60%. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that dropped dramatically down to about 3% at one point. And physicians have become leaders in talking about the dangers of tobacco. We could do better, but we can certainly do better with climate change. I became involved with Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
Was asked by the NIH to get involved with the rebuilding of the health infrastructure. And I have to tell you, these climate change does not affect everybody equally. I mean, obviously, the poor and minorities in New Orleans, in and around New Orleans, died at a much higher proportion than the rest of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Because 30% of them did not even have transportation. They didn't have automobiles to get them out of the night ward into the Superdome or on that bus to Houston.
Right.
So without question, children and the elderly and the poor suffer disproportionately.
Well, Dr. Satcher, forgive me for interrupting, but you said something really important that I want to follow up on here, and that's the example of the sea change that happened around tobacco and cigarette smoking, that it really went from being a commonly accepted, you know, practice in this country, and as you were noting, amongst doctors themselves, towards being viewed as this major public health issue. It's a really interesting example. I mean, how can we do that? How can we take those steps in terms of transforming, at least in part, how we view climate change into a public health issue? Because, you know, in your stat piece, you do quote directly from the U.S. climate risk assessment itself that says impacts from climate change on extreme weather and climate-related events, including air quality, transmissions of disease, food and water, are already increasingly threatening the health and well-being of the American people. So what's the next step we need to take to really push it through more of a public health lens?
Well, we've got to create a sense of urgency that we don't have now. I served on the World Health Organization's Commission on Social Determinants of Health. And, of course, when you talk about climate change, the social determinants of health come to the forefront. There needs to be a lot of education and different forms of motivation to get people to change their behavior. In terms of physicians, of course, we like to say here at the Morehouse School of Medicine that we need leaders who care enough, leaders who know enough, leaders who have the courage to do enough, and leaders who will persevere until the job is done. I think that's what we're facing now with climate change. Some people are threatened and don't want to get that involved with the issue because there are people who are a part of the problem who have a lot of resources,
mm-hmm.
just as there are people without resources who suffer disproportionately when there are major problems. I remember going to North Carolina with Hurricane Floyd and seeing caskets come out of the ground and were on top of buildings and top of churches. It's an amazing picture to see what climate change does over time. And without question, it impacts disproportionately minorities and the poor.
Right.
And I did a report as Surgeon General. I did the first Surgeon General's report on mental health. And one of the things that we tried to point out was that mental health is fundamental to overall health and well-being. There are a lot of people who are suffering disproportionately in terms of mental disorders, and they are impacted certainly by climate change at a greater rate than other people.
Yeah, Dr. Satcher, forgive me again for jumping in here, but I'm sorry to say I don't know this. Have we had a Surgeon General's report on the public health impacts of climate change?
We have not. No, the report that I did was it's the only report to date on mental health. Uh-huh. So just generally pointing out the magnitude of the problem of mental illness in children and adults and the impact that it has on their overall health. But the other point that we try to make is when something happens because of climate change and whether it's a hurricane or what have you, people who are mentally ill suffer disproportionately.
Mm-hmm.
Their families suffer disproportionately, and their mental disorders worsen. We screened people in New Orleans and Baton Rouge back in I think it was 2007, and clearly people impacted by the hurricane were more likely to be depressed. Depression doubled in that population after the hurricane.
Yeah. You know, you were talking a little bit earlier about a sense of responsibility. I have to say we've got a comment that's come in online from a Facebook listener, Josh McKay, who's kind of pushing back. He says, to say that we've done nothing about this problem is asinine. For every coal-fired power plant we shut down, 4 go into operation in China and India. We are not the problem. Dr. Satcher, we've just got under a minute to go before we have to take a break here. How would you respond to listeners like Josh?
Well, I agree that, and I don't think we said that we have done nothing. I think we said that we can make it a much greater priority, and we can do more to influence our policymakers when it comes to issues related to climate change. But I don't think we've said that we have done nothing. But I do say that we can do more, just like we could do more with the tobacco issue. In 2014, when we reviewed the Surgeon General's report on smoking and health, we estimated that globally more than 20 million people have survived because of refusing to smoke or quitting smoking if they had already smoked. So it's become a global program that started in the United States, but then the World Health Organization took it on too. And so it's a global issue now. Many lives are being saved, millions. And well, that's what I'm saying, that we can save more lives.
Well, Dr. David Satcher, 16th Surgeon General of the United States, speaking with us from Atlanta. Dr. Satcher, thank you very much. We got to take a quick break. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about whether or not we should view climate change also as a global health emergency. I'm joined this hour by Dr. Regina LaRocque. She's an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at Massachusetts General Hospital, and she wrote a perspective paper in the most recent edition of the New England Journal of Medicine, co-wrote it, I should say. It's entitled Climate Change, a Health Emergency. We're also joined today by Dr. Mona Sarfati. She is executive director of the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health at George Mason University's Center for Climate Change Communication. And Dr. Sarfati, let me turn back to you here, because before the break, we were talking with former Surgeon General Dr. David Satcher. And it's interesting because, you know, he was saying that we, in his view, the healthcare establishment needs to do more to talk about the health effects of climate change. And in the paper that he co-authored in STAT, which, by the way, I should say he co-authored with another Surgeon General who was Dr. Richard Carmona, who was nominated by a Republican president. So it was a bipartisan paper here. You know, he says, as two former U.S. Surgeons General, one nominated by a Republican president, the other by a Democratic president, we see climate change as a growing threat to the health of all Americans. So, Dr. Sarfati, my question for you is, are there places where the healthcare establishment intersects with policymaking, whether it's the Surgeon General, whether it's the CDC, other groups, where we could see more climate leadership?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. Our organization, the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health, has 23 major medical societies as members, and those societies represent nearly 600,000 physicians, which is almost two-thirds of all the physicians in the United States. And they have come together to speak to the public and to policymakers to let them know that climate change is harming our health and that climate solutions would benefit our health. Those medical societies are involved in policymaking at the federal level. Many of them have state chapters in every state in the country, and so they're also involved in policymaking at the state level. And they are speaking out about the importance of addressing climate change, of changing our energy profile so that we're using more clean, renewable energy and less fossil fuels that pollute the air, and speaking out about protecting those who were vulnerable from the health impacts of climate change. We spoke in the last segment about the groups that are more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And there's a great deal that could be done to protect them. And also, by the way, to protect our infrastructures from climate change. And some of the vital infrastructure is health infrastructure. I know very well a physician from the Houston Health Department who was there in 2005 when they had a major hurricane and had tremendous damage to their hospitals. And because of that, the hospitals came together and worked to make the entire health system more resilient.
Right.
And so when Harvey hit and there was all that flooding, not a single hospital closed down. They were all able to keep functioning. And that's an example of what we can do if we work to make our country more resilient to the climate change impacts and especially health impacts, which is the area that we focus on.
So, Dr. LaRocque, let me turn back to you, because I'm also still quite taken with a couple of things Dr. Satcher said before the break. One is that there has never been a Surgeon General's report on climate and health. Maybe we'll have one in the future. Who knows? But the other is he brought up the tobacco example, right, and how he felt that a major turning point in how Americans viewed tobacco, or the health establishment even, took time, but it came when we went through sort of public health efforts, the image of cigarette smoking in many people's minds was converted from the Marlboro man to, you know, looking at the positive benefit or health benefits of not smoking. Is there an example there for health and climate change?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I think there's a tremendous parallel between what took place with the tobacco industry and health and what's happening now with climate change and health. I think we do need to take ownership of the fact that this is a health issue. And we need to push back against other voices that are out there that have a different narrative to tell here. The narrative that needs to be coming clearly from the health sector is that the image of climate change is not a polar bear on an ice floe. It is a child with an asthma attack struggling to breathe. And I think that we need to reject a lot of messages that are out there that confuse people about whether this is a concern for health professionals or not, because the answer is that it is. I acknowledge there isn't a Surgeon General report on this topic, but frankly, the National Climate Assessment that came out a few weeks ago is eye-popping. And I think everybody needs to take a look closely at what has been reported there about the health impacts of climate, which are happening right now in our own communities to everybody, not just vulnerable populations, but also everybody. Yeah. So it's a fundamental issue that really threatens to reverse a lot of the public health gains we've made over the last decades. Mm.
Now, you know, a lot of people might actually take issue with what you said and said, why can't it be both a polar bear and a young person with worsening asthma as well? So just
point taken.
Speaking for all listeners there. But I want to play another just quick piece of tape here, because just again, to get a sense of how we're seeing these impacts on the ground, I wonder if folks remember that last year, you know, for quite a long time, Cape Town in South Africa was concerned about day zero, as they were calling it, the day that Cape Town would actually basically run out of water or have to start rationing it because of an extended drought they were having in South Africa. And so in January of last year, CBS News foreign correspondent Deborah Pata spoke with On Point's Jane Clayson about Cape Town's water problem. And about at that time, the city was expected to run out of water in April of last year. It didn't, but nevertheless, at the time, Pata said climate change is making matters worse for Cape Town.
Even if they get good rainfalls in Cape Town this year, it won't be enough because Cape Town is getting hotter. Every year, temperatures are much higher than the previous year, and what you're seeing is the problem of evaporation. So the water evaporates as the temperature increases. So going forward, there won't be enough water. So although there might not be the severe water restrictions in the future, there certainly are going to always be some kind of restrictions in place in Cape Town.
So that was last year before Cape Town was concerned about hitting day zero, as they called. Fortunately, it began to rain there, so they never actually had their water emergency, but the threat remains. We got so many callers who want to join us, and I have been neglecting them. My apologies to you, but let's go to Victor, who's calling from Albany, New York. Victor, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm a physician, medical acupuncturist who works in the trenches in clinical medicine. I'm not an academic, but I see increases of allergy, increases of severity of allergy, asthma, and the not only the morbidity, the illness, and the cost, the indirect cost that people are have to miss work, or they have to miss, they have to get out of work to take care of their children because of the heightened use of medical services, and that costs more money in terms of, you know, those resources can't be used for other patients or other conditions. And things that I deal with, you know, some of the rarer conditions are not addressed because we have to focus more money on the more common but very prevalent and the complications that arise from this.
Well, Victor, thank you so much for your call. Dr. LaRocque, let me turn back to you. Victor's bringing up a couple of things that we haven't touched on yet this hour, and that is, of course, the healthcare sector is already an enormous part of the United States economy there. Victor was saying that, you know, he's seeing perhaps even more resources going to manage and care for these potentially climate-linked health problems he's seeing walking into his own office. And then he also talked about the productivity impacts, perhaps, on the U.S. economy. People are missing work because they can't breathe due to exacerbated asthma, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are two really important points. I think there's a lot of data coming out now that, in fact, if we address climate change, we may actually save money on health costs. There's some really powerful data that show you decrease hospital admissions, you decrease attacks from respiratory illnesses. So, frankly, these may be cost-saving measures in terms of the health sector. And there are clearly data that show that heat waves affect labor productivity. So people don't work when they're hot. There's also some very frightening data that show that people get aggressive during heat waves. So there's some really unanticipated effects that can occur as well. So the bottom line is, it's not all doom and gloom in the sense that if we begin to address this issue collectively and individually, we actually stand to improve people's health. And we may save money in the process as well. So it's really important for us to work hard on changing the narrative about the benefits that we stand to gain, about the impacts to our health if we don't make the changes that, frankly, we need to do immediately. Yeah. The latest data from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change say that we really only have a 12-year window to start turning things around. So there is real urgency here. And I also just want to pick up on something that your physician caller said, which is, I think one of the reasons that I felt compelled to write the piece in the New England Journal was to call on my fellow physicians and nurses and health professionals to find their own voice on this topic, to tell the stories like the caller told, to join with other like-minded professionals. We don't all have to be in academic institutions to speak out about this topic. I'm a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility, proudly. And frankly, physicians who gather together collectively to advocate on important issues, we can make a difference. And so I would encourage people to join grassroots efforts as well.
Well, let's talk to a soon-to-be physician. Let's go to Stella, who's calling from New Orleans. Stella, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, Stella. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to ask the panelists briefly, you know, so as an emerging physician, is there anything we can do clinically to sort of incorporate this idea of climate resilience or climate change awareness into primary care and preventive health?
Stella, don't go away. First, so you're a medical student, I gather.
Yes.
Okay. And how far along are you?
I am in my last year.
Oh, okay. Congratulations on that. And you're at Tulane?
Yes.
Okay. Just a quick question before I let you go. Has climate in any way been incorporated into any of your medical training so far?
So it is in the sense that we do learn about the social determinants of health, like your other the other panelist was saying, you know, about how the climate change does preferentially affect people in the lower socioeconomic status and incorporating those social determinants of health. But in terms of actual climate specifically, it's not really incorporated that much. But hopefully that will change.
All right. Well, Stella, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Sarfati, let me turn to you on that. I love Stella's question about, you know, once she becomes a newly minted MD, how can she better incorporate these questions or issues of climate in the preventative care she hopes to provide for her patients?
There is much that physicians can do to protect their patients against the health impacts of climate change. For parents of kids, they need to understand that summers are more severe than they used to be, and they need to pay special attention to how hot it is and whether their children are properly hydrated and protected from the heat. If they're taking care of people with asthma, they can advise them that when the weather is hot, the ozone levels are generally higher, and they can counsel patients to watch the air quality index so that if it does deteriorate, they know they may need to spend less time outside. They may need to spend all their time inside to avoid having an asthma attack, or they may need to take more medication. If people are without air conditioning, they need to be advised by their doctors that when heat waves hit, they should go someplace where there is air conditioning. If people are living someplace where there's recurrent flooding and they're exposed to mold and they have asthma or mold allergies, physicians can educate them about that. So there, and then, of course, for those who are places where there is West Nile virus that's carried by mosquitoes or Zika virus or Lyme disease or other tick illnesses, that if they're spending time outside, they should be properly covered. They should use the kind of insect repellents that will protect them against mosquitoes and ticks. So there's a great deal that physicians can be telling their patients to protect them against these effects.
Dr. LaRocque, go ahead.
Well, I just want to thank the caller for bringing up that point, because I think that this is something we hear from medical students actually around the country, that they are clamoring to have a more comprehensive education on this topic. And I think we need to do that. We need to be not only educating our patients and our colleagues and policymakers, but we need to make this an integral part of medical school curricula. And I think efforts are beginning along those lines.
Okay, so one more question to bring it back to how the medical community itself can act upon itself here. Dr. LaRocque, I'm just curious, are there other ways? We've talked about emissions, but overall, I mean, since it's such a resource-intensive field, are there other ways to sort of reduce its impact on the environment, on climate?
Well, I think that you brought up a really important point before about advocacy, and I don't want to move away from what you've said, but I do think it's important to understand that there are a lot of physician organizations already working hard to advocate on some important topics here. The American Medical Association actually passed a resolution calling on itself to divest from the fossil fuel industry. The Canadian Medical Association has already divested from fossil fuels. The Royal College of General Practitioners in England has called on itself to divest from fossil fuels. So I think that physician voices can really play an important role in the advocacy realm. In terms of tending to our own garden, as I've said, I think there's an endless number of things we can do, from waste reduction to changing the food we serve our patients to turning off our lights at night to sourcing our energy from renewable. There's an endless number of things that we can and should be doing.
Well, Dr. Regina LaRocque, an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at Massachusetts General Hospital, she co-authored a perspective paper along with Dr. Karen Solomon titled Climate Change, a Health Emergency. It's in the latest issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. Dr. LaRocque, thank you so very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Dr. Mona Sarfati, with us from Washington, Executive Director of the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health at George Mason University's Center for Climate Change Communication. Dr. Sarfati, it's been a real pleasure to have you on. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.